Blog Talk Radio.
Wait a minute now. Okay, Marva didn't have the startup. Okay. Thanks, Marva. Wait a minute.
Domineering, but showing love, guidance, get all the fathers of the world to stand up and be fathers, that would be great. But then we have mothers who are the right arm of the father. They're supposed to do the cooking, raise the children, do the sewing, and help the father to guide and direct. Then there's the son. The son, most sons are like imitators of their father. So we're back again to the father. He is guiding in the right way. The son is definitely going to be all right. Then we have the daughter watching her mother. Later, she's gonna be a mother, and she'll have her own sons and daughters. It don't just stop there.
All right. Are we ready? They're ready to go. And Marva, let us know if you can hear us well here today on this beautiful Monday morning. And what a beautiful song. And just think, that song by the Mighty Mighty OJs is over 30 years old. And what has happened to the family reunion? I know that the Good family, Ernest and Linda, they go to a family reunion every year. But does your family have one? There's so many other things you can talk about, and you're going to be talking about with Dorothy Patterson. She's the reality coach, and this is the real deal with the reality coach, Dorothy Patterson. So put your hands together, and you can call us at 646-200-0459, or you can just tune in, and you can post things in the chat, and the Real Deal team is here for you with the real deal. And so I'm going to turn it over to the reality coach, and things can't get any realer here than here, right here. And Dorothy, it's all yours.
Yay!
Woo! Well, thank you, Cheryl Smith, for that beautiful introduction. Oh my goodness, she is so right. Y'all, it's not going to get any realer than it will right here. So let's just see if we can get into this. We're going to talk about what is happening to our community. What is happening to the love, the camaraderie that we all as a people used to have in a holistic fashion. And it's just unreal what is going on. Y'all have to understand that there's a lot going on here. And let me get that out the way. Y'all, I'm so real. I'm going to just keep it real, y'all, okay? Let me see. I see that one of my guests is on. He's on here now. We're going to talk about, there's a hot topic. We talk about, I'm real, y'all. And I'm going to talk about real time, real talk, real issues. And this issue here is something that's going on in Dallas County that I think that needs to have a spotlight put on it. Y'all forgive me. I am moving around. Yes, I am, because I really want this to go over well. So here we go. I'm going to see if I can't get him. Reggie, can you hear us?
Oh, I hear you loud and clear.
All right. Well, hey there, Mr. Russian. How are you?
How are you doing, Ms. Patterson?
I am wonderful, 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 wonderful. We have another guest that's going to come join us. Well, why don't you make the introduction of who you are and what you stand for? Okay.
It's a very grassroots organization that I formed myself here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was made out of necessity because of the prior issues I had in Dallas where, you know, I've been a victim of malicious prosecution and almost went to prison twice behind these particular issues. But yet I'm always being told that it had more to do with me than what it, you know, as far as what had happened. But at the end of the day, this is happening to hundreds of thousands of people quite often. And here in Texas, even more often than that, because Texas has prosecuted more people and they have more people under supervision, whether it's incarceration, indictment for a case, you know, and or on probation or parole than any other place in the union.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a very difficult situation here because here in North Texas, everyone's under the thumb. You know, the system here, they have the media in check. They have
Excuse me, just one moment. What do you mean by in check? What does the word in check mean? What, for those
in
that
check
are...
means that in check, well, in check can mean a lot of things. They could get they're profiting off of the misfortunes of people that's being prosecuted. And, you know, and then most of the, most of the people here on a local level have invested into these corporate entities that's handling not just the prosecution, they're handling employment, because a lot of times they put people that they prosecute on their servitude to pay that out. It's just another way of circumventing the 13th Amendment.
So for those who don't understand the 13th, for those, and the reason why I'm doing this is because you're really far in your studies. What do you mean by the 13th Amendment? For those who don't know what the 13th Amendment stands for.
Well, the 13th Amendment is it prohibited slavery unless you're under some type of order from a court, like you've been prosecuted. People have to get on community service because they can't afford to pay off their fines and whatnot. So they become indentured servants here around the area. There's mm-hmm. several warehouses that are hired, that go through the court system. There's for example, the Dallas National Cemetery. They get all their maintenance and cleaning crews through this through the county off of probation, and Texas has long been known as a place where you can come here on vacation, leave on probation. But they get around all these things, and some of the ridiculousness that they pile on people for so-called criminal acts. Just like now, if you pull out your cell phone recording the police because you can't trust that their camera phone is on and whatnot, their monitor's on. They can get you for obstruction or for not following a lawful order. You know, turning off my cell phone should not be considered a lawful order. That's for my protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we have seen too many times police pulling people over for some of the most ridiculous of situations, so they can go nosing around in your car, and if they find out that you got a traffic warrants and everything like that, that's all the probable cause they need to go further on it. They want to criminalize you by any means necessary just to put leverage on you. And, you know, I mean, if you just happen to be going to work and, you know, find something, if they want to tow your car, we've seen them one person like Angela West, who was the wife of Alan West. She was driving around in a nice Mercedes SUV, and they claimed that she was drunk.
Hold that thought 1 second. Y'all know I keep it real. I have someone on the Mr. Collins, are you available? Can I send you the link? I'm going to send you the link. StreamYard. We're just talking about the things that are going on in Dallas County with the way the cases are processed, the laws filed. Okay? All right. Thank you. All right. All right. That's an attorney that's coming on ready to kind of collaborate what you're stating about how Dallas is maliciously doing things that we – it's just unreal, the stuff that's going on right now. And we've got to do something. And I believe that it's important that people hear from not just you and me, we are just people that are out here trying to make things happen and see them go through. But this is an attorney that's dealing directly with the situation. And he's going to come on and introduce himself. And you're familiar with him. You know who he is, Mr. Bradrick Collins. He is, he can better give us insight on what you're talking about, how they, okay, so have you, you said you've been pulled over maliciously as well, without probable cause?
Exactly. I mean, it's a commonplace type of thing. I mean, like, for example, one night, me and a few guys riding, just got off work, go up to PLS to cash our checks. We and this is in Irving. We leave there. We're riding, stop by a store, get a couple of beers and whatnot. We're riding. And all of a sudden, Irving police pulls up behind us claiming that I was going 51 miles an hour in the 30-mile zone over on Rock Island. And I'm going like, officer, there's no way in the world you could have clocked me going that fast because I was making a right turn going, trying to merge on the Beltline. But they can pull you, they make a reason to pull you over because nobody in their right mind would be going that fast right in the middle of town knowing Irving. So they start running everybody's background to see who had the stripes on. And see, now they don't just pull over, they pull you over. They pull over not just the driver. They pull in the passengers out the car, too.
Wow.
And one of the men just happened to have a parole violation for not reporting to his PO. And, you know, they said, well, we don't care about what you all are riding or doing. We're just trying to find out, you know, what you guys are over here for and what's the problem. I'm going like, pulling us over for a false accusation, you know, that's just totally unconscionable. But they do it all the time,
mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what we call law enforcement now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I can recall a time in Grand Prairie I got pulled over like that with a friend, and I was driving her vehicle. They said that the light bulb on the license plate wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what I did when I pulled out of the store, I saw the cop driving through the parking lot. So then I leave, I go up there to the stop sign to make make my right turn. He jumps behind us, so I quickly turned and drove back to in front of a store that had cameras. That these are part of the things you have to do as far as surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'd have kept straight and I'd been on a dark on a dark side of the road, nobody would know what you're doing or what's going on. That's when they can really swarm on you. So next thing you know, I turn around, now it's three police cars behind me.
Mm.
And you know, and I mean, I had a couple of unpaid tickets. I had some tickets in Grand Prairie as well as in Dallas. But the only reason why they didn't do anything, because I was like, hey, you want to arrest me? Go ahead and arrest me. But they didn't want to arrest me. Why? Because the owner of the car was there, and all she had to do was just drive. They don't want to take you to jail now for tickets anymore.
Keep talking, Reggie. I'll be right back.
Right. Okay. They don't want to hold you for tickets anymore because they know that's just such a waste now. But anything that they can do to facilitate filing more charges on you, and, you know, another thing they like to do, they like to try to harangue you by asking you stupid questions. Where are you going? What are you doing? Why are you over here on this side of town? Things of that nature that's, you know, very much none of anyone's business. Because I'm driving this way because I'm in my car and I'm driving. You know, so I shouldn't have to be asking these type of questions. And of course, their favorite one is, we smell weed. Anybody who knows me know I don't even smoke. So they have these routines already drawn up because when you get accosted that way, it's always going to be their word against yours.
Okay.
And you're going to be the one that's going to lose 9 times out of 10, or in most instances, even 10 times out of 10. We have to stay focused as far as not allowing them to provoke and agitate you You know, because, I mean, they do all type of things to agitate you, putting their hands on their guns, or they their favorite ones when they refer to you as suspect. You know, I'm not, I mean, the only thing suspect is the, is this whole entire issue that we're dealing with when we get stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And because 9 times out of 10, they don't even write you up the ticket for what they stopped you for, because that wasn't the intent. The intent is they're just trying to find more slaves that they can bring into the system. Because that's what this whole system is right now. It's a slave system. So when you refer to it as slave, they call it being extreme. But, hell, I'm just calling a spade a spade.
Hmm.
You know, if
okay, I know.
I call a spade a spade. I call a duck a duck.
Okay, I noticed that a lot of times the most common hold that they put on a lot of people, can you tell me the most common one that they use when they stop you and they want to take you to jail or whatever? What is the first thing that they say that you did?
Well, it depends.
I'll tell you the one that I know is so common is evading arrest.
Evading arrest is, that's like a little bit after the fact.
Oh.
That's like after they stopped you. When you're just driving, I mean, unless you're just going to drive a long distance and everything, yeah, they could use evading arrest as an excuse. A lot of times they can just look at if you got an older car or something like that, you drive like something like a 2007 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to pull you over just for the sole purpose to see if you have insurance. So insurance is a very costly traffic citation. Now, if you happen to just have your have all of that, and then the other one is when people are trying to be, I ain't gonna say obstructive, they're just being frustrated that you're hassling them, and they say, well, if I haven't committed a crime, I don't have to give you my ID.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're trying to combat that by saying, you know, you're violating the lawful order.
Mm-hmm.
So, you do that back and forth, but I tell people all the time, never get yourself in a situation where you're doing a back-and-forth soiree with the police on the side of the road. Whatever it is that's going on, thing I always advise is to, whatever they're saying, just necessarily just nod your head and just go along with it, because if you say or do anything more than that, they can use that as a reason to say that now your truculence can allow them to believe that you have something to hide.
Mm. Okay.
You know, and
well, I believe we got Attorney Bradley Collins on here. Mr. Collins, can you unmute your mic? I can't unmute you.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, there you go. Okay, can you, well, Mr. Collins, let me just tell you what we're talking about real quickly. I know that you are an attorney that's dealing with Dallas County as far as things go with the criminal side of Dallas County, and we're just trying to enlighten the people, because the biggest thing that Dallas is suffering from right now is the loss of files, the loss of terabytes, and all these criminal files. Have you in any way experienced that as an attorney here representing clients in Dallas County?
Yeah, I've experienced not just in Dallas County, but there have been issues where people have lost particular files that hasn't necessarily been sent to the clerk's office, who's custodian of records. I've had instances like that, but not to such degree that we've been hearing about lately.
Okay. So how Mr. Ruffin was talking about how Dallas has a propensity to consistently, and we're only speaking about Dallas because this is where we are, and this is not to say it's not happening in other places, because I'm certain it is. But he was just saying that how easy it is for people to get caught up in a simple traffic violation could lead to so many things. And he was saying that he had been pulled over for speeding and he wasn't. I know many, many people to get the hold on a lot of people to see if they can find some things, they start out with evading arrest. Is that a common issue you as an attorney have seen in some of the cases that lead on to something else?
I think the question you're asking me is there a pretextual for stops?
Yes.
In other words,
because officers often sometimes or at any time have another reason for pulling a person over other than what it really is. And I think you'd be naive to think that that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened very often on my watch, but I'm certainly aware throughout the history of our nation that pretextual stops have always been an issue. And with the right defense attorney, you need someone who's able to take a look at that and see if your constitutional rights have been violated. And the law has remedies for pretextual stops, up to including not even the admission of certain evidence.
Okay, now a lot of people may not know, but I'm going to bring it to the forefront of the table. You are definitely familiar with this case that I'm getting ready to bring up, if I may. Is it okay if I bring it up?
What case is it?
The case of Draylen Patterson, the Dallas Uptown serial rapist.
Absolutely. I'll be arguing that case tomorrow before the Fifth Court of Appeals at Dallas.
Oh, so how do – okay, so what is the importance of arguing a case before the Fifth Court of Appeals? What does that do for someone who has – now, this happens after someone has been convicted. Am I right?
That's correct.
Okay.
It's a tremendous opportunity, a tremendous blessing to be able to argue a case before an appellate court. You've already submitted your brief to that court, and most of the time they just read your brief. And if they grant you oral arguments, like I say, it's a tremendous opportunity to explain what may be the legal and the factual difficulties of a case and advocate on behalf of your client, which is what I intend to do tomorrow.
So that's usually a very difficult place to get in front of the, I guess, the appellate court, the appeals court. I'm not familiar with the proper terms.
Yes, it's a very difficult, you're right, process, because you're not guaranteed to have what we call oral arguments. As an attorney, you're not guaranteed to go to the appeals court, which is going to be a three-panel judge who've already read your brief, by the way. And you get the opportunity to explain to them what you think the pertinent issues are and to be able to answer any questions that they may have concerning the law and the facts of your case.
So this is basically where you have written this. You're the one that wrote the brief and submitted it. And so now, because the brief, and I'm just gonna say it in my layman's term, the brief was so well written that you pointed out some very strong constitutional arguments that even the appellate court judges want to know more about it.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So I'm assuming that's their reason for tomorrow. That's the way it goes for all of these panel hearings. That's the purpose of it. You request oral arguments in your brief and you state why. And the reason I stated is because the intricacy of the facts and how difficult the case is and being able to articulate that in person, I feel would be more effective. Of course, I'm only going to have 20 minutes to do that. Each side gets 20 minutes. And so you have to be very concise and straight to the point.
Well, I know I've been dealing with you for a minute, so I know you are concise and straight to the point. And I'm telling you all, if you're looking for a great defense attorney, I must say I have not been more pleased with this defense attorney. And by the way, I know a lot of people may not know, but Draylen Patterson is my son. And I'm only speaking on this because I have his attorney here. And myself can see the egregious errors that were done as a layman. I'm not even an attorney, but I can see some of the things that Mr. Collins so insightfully and detailedly pointed out, which even made me go, oh, wow. And he did it so well to where I can even understand it. And to find an attorney in Dallas that will go up against, this is not Mr. Collins saying this, this is me. Before Mr. Collins came along, I saw how, as Mr. Ruffin was saying, how it seems that they're systematically connected. They're systematically joined together, creating these cases and doing these things. And it's
even the, from what I can see, the defense attorney was even seeming like he was working with the prosecution. And when you find, now, Mr. Collins, I'm not sure if you can answer this or not, but is it abnormal for a defense attorney not to cross-examine someone who's accusing their client of something? Is that a normal thing not to do?
Well, I can't speak to the trial strategies of a given attorney. Of course, you know, I didn't represent Mr. Patterson at trial. I'm his appellate lawyer. And my job is to point out the errors and the unreasonable decisions as defense attorney. And I've had a chance to cross-examine Mr. Patterson's attorney, and they explained on the record why they made the decision that they did. I felt as an appellate attorney that some of those decisions was unreasonable. As it goes to whether defense attorneys, quote-unquote, sell out or work with the state, I wouldn't dare speak to that. It'd be unprofessional for me to do so, especially not having any kind of evidentiary fact. But that's not something that, you know, we're here to talk about. What has happened has happened. I believe that Mr. Patterson did not get a fair trial. I feel like many of his constitutional rights was violated. I believe that the DNA evidence that we have is going to be sufficient to create more than a reasonable doubt that he was not the person that the state made him out to be. And that's the difficult task that we're going to be faced with tomorrow. And I think that whatever defense attorney you have, people admire and choose defense attorneys who are going to fight for them. And that's what I do. I fight for people, and I fight for their rights. And that's the only guarantee that we make at my firm, is that we will fight for your constitutional rights.
Well, Mr. Collins, I know you're a busy man. I just want – and what time is this to – okay, I'm not sure. Is this like a public thing? Can people – can anybody go in and sit in the courtroom? Are you aware of that? Or are you not aware of that?
I'm told that it's open to the public. Of course, our laws say that all trials and hearings and things like that are open to the public, unless the judge would say otherwise for whatever reason. But I've been told in this particular case that it is open to the public. And so that's where I will be tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.
Well, you all, if you want to see an attorney at work, and I'm not just saying this, I'm saying I have seen this man at work. If you want to see a true attorney at work, make your way down to the George Allen Court building tomorrow at 9 a.m. and let his work speak for him. Well, Mr. Collins, thank you. I know you got to go, and thank you for taking the time out to speak to us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the opportunity being on your show.
I'll be seeing you tomorrow, Brett.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Collins, thank you so much. Okay, now we have joining us. Okay, now, Mr. Collins, you can see he's a consummate professional. He is not about to say or do anything that's going to jeopardize his professional ethics. And, I mean, even when I have been hostile and have wanted to do something that was unnecessarily not right, but that mama bear in me came out, Mr. Collins is like,
not you.
No.
Not you, Dorothy.
The mama bear comes out, and Mr. Collins is like, I'm not giving you advice, but I am saying if it were me, I wouldn't do that. So
Yeah, you had to get a cease and desist order.
Yes. And he does it so well, and I'm just like, wow. Oh, hey, Stephen, how are you?
How's it going?
Yeah, and you're someone that we could, you know, we're talking about how these terabytes and things that's going on in Dallas, and how it seems that it's like a whole system here where people are working together to just constantly keep people in jail or in trouble in some kind of form, fashion. I mean, have you experienced any of this stuff yourself?
Yes, definitely. Remember, that's what I was telling you about 2.5 years ago, and the police officer lied in his police report to have arrested for that family violence assault charge. I pretty much had a defense misdemeanor charge for 2.5 years, where there was 3 judges, 5 different attorneys that had to recruit themselves in order to even get a dismissal. And all the while, they were trying to give me 5 years in jail and also offered me all kinds of other contingencies saying, hey, take these, please, with the five-year sentence on something that I already had enough proof that I didn't do. Then they lost my evidence when I was in court. The final judge, which was my wife, she pretty much said that we're going to continue because she had no jurisdiction over an attorney that I had hired prior to having public defenders defend the case. They were like, well, she lost her files. I was like, well, you're still having me represent a criminal case and try to defend myself files that they lost, not me. You know what I mean? I understand it's been in my possession to lose, but when it's in the court's possession, they lose the files. Thankfully, enough, like I said, I was able to find other evidence and get prepared for it. But at the end of everything, once I started telling them, let's subpoena the officers, let's subpoena the attorneys that lost the files, all that stuff was on record, the prosecution finally came back and said they wanted to do a dismissal.
Wow. So, and it took you how long to get to this point?
2.5 years. But they
still haven't.
Yeah, they haven't given me my dismissal paperwork yet. They just said it's dismissed in the courts. I went up to the courts and they said that once a dismissal is met, it still goes back to the judge, which I think before you do a dismissal, judge can sign up on dismissal the moment it's dismissed. You know what I mean? But they're saying that now my dismissal is in the process of having the judge sign off on it. Then, of course, you know, once you get a dismissal, you're going to get your bond money back. So, of course, I went to the bond center inside of the jail also. They're saying you got to wait 46 weeks for that, and that's something the judge has to sign off to also. So it's like, as far as the dismissal, I got to dismiss. You know what I mean? These are all false charges. I went to the police department, and I did the internal affairs thing. They reprimanded him initially. In the beginning, he was reprimanded for his performance. You know what I mean? The final attorney that I had said he never even had proper calls to arrest me. The investigation happened after. You know what I mean? So these are all issues that I was talking to the judges. But every judge I had, I mean, since started, they were just recruiting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I literally had three judges and five attorneys recruit themselves before this final message. And of course, like I said, that messes with your livelihood, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
I judge, I'm like, how are you going to try an individual?
Yeah, that's
hard. A victim. I'm supposed to be a defendant this allegation that's been against me. But y'all lost my files. And
So you can relate to the terabyte file loss, whatever's going on. The Dallas Morning News, I believe, maybe 3 days ago, maybe 3 to 4 days ago, reiterated on how I think the DA was even on TV speaking.
Yeah, Friday night.
Friday night? Okay.
Yeah, Friday.
Okay.
I know there's a big case going on right now where they lost the files that could actually cause a dismissal for a murder case or something like that. I heard something like that. But, I mean, this is something that's been going on for more than 2.5 years on my case. Because on my case, the files were lost roughly in of me fighting this case. And this started going on like 2.5 years ago. So it's on court record, and they've made record of it that these files had been lost. The only thing is, the judge said she couldn't do nothing
about
it. Wow. So during this process, that's what I had to keep on going back to old files and stuff, trying to get the evidence that I needed. And the only way I was able to get the evidence I needed to actually start convincing the prosecutor to cancel, I had to interact with the individual that had made the allegation so I could have a recording that it was false. Otherwise, I would probably be in jail right now for 5 years.
Wow.
And on top of that, when the judge...
I can relate to.
Do what?
I was just saying, I can relate to that.
Yeah, a majority of this is they're saying, hey, we don't want you around the alleged victim, but they don't say alleged victim, you know what I mean? They just call them victim off the bat, you know what I mean? And like I was telling the judge, nothing's made this individual a victim. I'm not convicted of that charge. We got to be calling her a victim. And they kept saying it throughout the whole process. So I already knew if I didn't get in contact with the so-called alleged victim, like they were first, I would have been in jail for 5 years. So what I did, I had to get in contact with them. I started recording the individual. And I'm recording the individual saying that it's false. I showed it to the final prosecutor, public defender that I had. The judge is not supposed to be around them. You're not supposed to. She puts out the rest for a month with ankle under.
Wow.
No, I told the court that was the only way I lost it. She was like, well, you're not playing by the rules, so we're going to. So I was set down for a month after that.
Okay. So let me, I'm going to try to wrap this up so people can understand how the difficulties it is. Sometimes when you're appointed a public defender, I have done more work for my son's case than the attorney himself. You had a public defender. Mr. Ruffin, did you have a public defender in your case as well at one point in time?
My second case was a public defender, and what I did was there's a lot of rights that you have when you are on bail and you are dealing with a public defender that you don't have when you're dealing with, as they like to say, free world, by, you know, paying for everything yourself. Hey, when you're under the public defender, they can hire an investigator for you to look into your case. All of that's free of charge, and all that's going to be charged, you know, back to the state. And you know, the other thing that I did in my case was, instead of getting a jury trial, I had it done trial by judge.
Okay, hold on, Mr. Ruffin. Hold on. I want to stay with the point I was trying to make to people about public defenders. Did you find yourself doing more work on your own case than the attorney that was appointed by the state for you?
Well, there's two different sections. I don't mean to cut you off, but there's two different sections to that.
Okay.
Initially, I had an attorney that I was paying cash for. You know what I mean? Then mm-hmm. I got rid of that attorney for them to refer. The public defender's office, there's two forms of that. They refer attorneys out in the real world that find defender's office. So you're actually getting a regular attorney from an entity that signs up and says, hey, I do so many hours cases. But then you have individuals that actually office that are attorneys in the public defender's office that work at both.
Okay, so you're talking about the pro bono attorney and the...
No. In the criminal system, you could hire your own attorney. You can get basically tell the judge that you don't have to put one to represent for you. Well, what they'll do is they'll just... They have a list of attorneys that they could assign to your case. They just put one for you that you know it. Those attorneys are not with the public defender's office. They are contracted to represent the public defender's office for defense. Then you have actual attorneys that are in the public defender's office that will, they represent the state basically for representing you. You know what I mean? That's the public defender's office.
Okay, but what I'm saying, because I hear the term, people always ask me, can you go, why don't you call an attorney and see if they've done all of their pro bono work? So would that be along the lines of what you're talking about, the list of attorneys that okay.
Especially like Alice's renter, I was paying for her. She was a regular attorney that I went and found. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I was paying for her. She's the one that actually lost the bout in the beginning. So she asked the judge to recruits as well. Well, they at first attorney through the public defender's office, not a public defender, but as an attorney through the public defender's office.
Okay.
So they actually gave me three of those. They all resigned. They all recruited themselves. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They being affected by being represented by the public defender's office.
Okay, so I understand. I get what you're stating, but I'm trying to do this for the public so they will know. I understand with your case, you were appointed so many different you had lawyers recruit themselves.
Let me ask this question.
So, go ahead.
How many times were you set? How many times were your case reset? You know, during your situation, Stephen.
Okay, hold on. Before we answer that, let's get clarity on how the attorney system with the public defender, how this all works. Okay, first of all,
this is how it works. If you get an attorney that represents through the public defender's office, that's where you don't need to.
Your phone keeps going in and out. It keeps going in and out.
An individual that's facing a criminal charge. Even if it's a civil charge, you have to ask that the attorney, are you actual with the public defender's office, or are you an attorney at own entity under a contract to perform services for the public defender's office? That's a big question that you need to ask, because most people think, okay, I don't have any money, so the judge gave you an attorney. Well, even though that judge gave you an attorney, that attorney may not be an attorney for the public defender's office. He could have his own law firm.
Well, most of them do. Most of them have their own firm. Yes. So all I'm saying is, all I want people to understand is, Stephen, the thing is that you and I, we know the jargon because we've been caught up in the system just as Mr. Ruffin understands it. But for people who are new to this, who don't know, the two things, when you hear someone say pro bono, that means you can go and ask a lawyer, have they done all of their billable community service hours, and will they take your case pro bono? Most of those lawyers have their own firm. But if that doesn't work, then you go to what Stephen is saying. You go and you allow the district attorney, the state, to appoint an attorney for you. And then you can ask them the question he just stated. Am I correct?
Yes. What I've learned to be more effective than hiring an attorney, I get a public defender hired for. Prior to anything, get you a public defender first or an attorney that represents through the public defender's office. That way they're able to utilize the resources that doesn't come out of our. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, that is true because that is very true. But the only thing about that is some of these public defenders, and I just hate to say it like this, but it's so true and it's so real. And hey, we on here the real deal with the reality coach. Okay,
right.
The real deal is my son was appointed a public defender. Matter of fact, they pushed us and encouraged us to take this public defender because I too have spent about $12,000 to $15,000 on a free will lawyer just for a bond reduction hearing. And when I didn't get no results, I'm like, well, I'm not getting any results. I may as well go with a public defender. So I ended up going with this public defender who was basically shoved down our throat. And let me tell you, that public defender did absolutely nothing.
What they will do is the documentation and stuff that you'll need to be able to present that to another attorney. I've learned. There was certain stuff that the public defender's office wouldn't get for me. I would request it, and they'll be like, oh, no, no. And I knew that was their tactic to try to be working with the prosecution. But one thing I noticed is they were able to get more of, and I'm not saying that evidence-wise as far as reporting from the courts. When you have everything's on record, if you request what's on record and sometimes free world attorney representing what's on record, they won't give you everything. But they will make sure that they give record to the public defender's office. Because at the public defender's office, and that's where it goes into that 50-50 split. I felt like this, even though I started off with a free world attorney, I should have started off with an attorney that was represented by the public defender's office and then got a free world attorney to not be a public defender.
Okay, so Mr. Ruffin, can you quickly, do you see the compelling comparison
the layout of how it all goes.
Yes.
Right. See, one of the things that happens in that scenario is that just prolongs the agony because, I mean, you're up there, you're on a bailment, and you're up there just trying to get this thing resolved, and that's what they counted on. They're hoping that you want to just get this thing over with. That's why they keep stalling,
yes.
And, you know, making plea deal. And, you know, if you did have an attorney and you're paying out of pocket, that's more money. And it wears you down to the point where, you know, now, hell, I'm all out of money. We still haven't even gotten past the discovery phase of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but back to the point you was making about the terabyte information. Now, all of these things, you know, persistently happened during COVID. Because I know for a fact from my own experiences, when you go down there, they had closed the record building back in 2020. Back then, so I think it was June. And the records department stayed closed for almost a year and a half. And that's when they claimed all this terabyte stuff happened. But the thing is, not only did it happen in that regard, that wasn't just because of something that affected the police, but it definitely affected the DA's office on how they can pursue any case. So what they did to try to cover up and use the subterfuge was that they kept dangling plea deals, hoping that you would just, in your frustration,
okay.
Take a plea deal which bails them out.
Okay, but we're going to let's say what I'm trying to do is make sure we educate the public about the difference between a public defender and a court appointed and how it appears that the state and all of them come together and work. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Your information is very pertinent, but we need to make sure that this is understood by those who might find themselves in this unfortunate and unprecedented situation.
All right. Well, let me put this thought in first, because I definitely think this will get us in the right direction. All attorneys are required by law to do 600 hours of pro bono work.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's for their law license. And that's still at the discretion of that attorney what they will and won't use as far as pro bono work. Now, the work that they do during the state, that's how they—that's how most attorneys make their money, because unfortunately, most clients don't have the financial resolve to handle their cases paying out of pocket. That was the point I was making about how they like to reset when you are paying out of pocket, because eventually they're going to get it down to a public defender. But see, most of the main function of the public defender, for the most part, is trying to negotiate a plea deal.
A plea. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't understand that part of it. Now, let's say, like, in a situation you got pulled over for something, the police, you know, violated your rights. They have a 2-year window for you to not just get your criminal part resolved, but then file a civil suit against the city, which in most cases, they throw up all type of excuses like conflicts of interest or as we was talking about earlier about probable cause matters. All of these are just done to frustrate you and try to work you around into believing, like for example, this one client that I had.
Okay, wait a minute. Mr. Ruffin. Okay, I understand where you're going with this, but I'm just trying to give facts on public defender and how it works. You were in a good lane about the 600 billable hours that they have to do to maintain their license. So people understand that you can get a public defender, as long a pro bono lawyer, if they haven't done their billable hours. And then if they have, then you can go to the state and ask, tell them you're indigent and you can't afford an attorney, and they will appoint one for you. But just know that once you get to that point, you have to be very, very careful and very vigilant in your own study of the law at that point in time, because you need to know your rights. And that's when the constitutional amendment comes into play. Just because you get a court-appointed attorney, or you have a free will attorney, or you're paying for one, you as an individual must do your own research as well. And that's where I believe we fall short when it comes to those three entities. Public, paying for one, pro bono, or even court-appointed. And that's where they get you. And then you go into all of these different things, because if you understand that, and you do your homework very well with that, then you can go to them when, like Mr. Ruffin and Stephen is saying, when they go to talking about a plea deal, well, if you know you're not guilty, why would you take a plea deal? Plea deal, now we can tell them about the difference in a plea deal. And help me, you two, if I'm in the right vein. A plea deal is something that they push so hard, because more than likely they're offering you a good plea deal. Either two things are happening. Either they don't have the evidence or they don't have enough. And if you're guilty, you already know they have enough. So you're going to take the plea deal. Am I right with my analogy of that?
Somewhat.
Okay.
But, you know, that's what we call a difference with definite distinctions.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they will quantify as what they can have to go through with a trial, because it's all about trying to scare you from going to a trial, because you're basically doing their work when you take a plea deal, because if you had evidence or didn't have evidence or whatnot, it all gets thrown in the garbage disposal at that point once you sign that deal.
And
that was the point I was about to make earlier.
Okay, so once you sign, okay, y'all, we got to keep this short, because I'm getting ready to wrap this up, because we've been on here for almost an hour, and I want to make sure we get these points in. So just know, now, help me if I'm wrong, Stephen, if I'm wrong. So when you take a plea deal, as Mr. Ruffin stated, you're throwing all the evidence out the window, that you've pretty much done their work for them. And with doing that, that does not give you an opportunity to do an appeal as well. So that's just throwing all your constitutional rights out the window.
Correct.
Okay. So now what happens? Okay, you want to say something, Stephen, real quick?
I would recommend, before anybody takes the plea deal, because this is how they were trying to do me. All these five attorneys were coming after me saying, hey, we'll give you this plea, we'll give you this plea. I must have been offered at least 50 different pleas. You know what I mean? all without ever whatever.
That part.
I'm being fair with you. It's on record. All this was being offered to me without me ever seeing one shred of evidence that the prosecution was going to use against me.
Wow.
One thing this final attorney told me is prior to them even ever offering you any kind of pleas or you even trying to accept any kind of pleas, you as a defendant had the right to say, show me what the prosecution is going to represent in court. So that way you know.
Right, motion of discovery.
Well, and here's the thing. And here's the thing. If, like someone told me, with me being involved and not knowing, and my son, and we don't even know what's going on. We are new. We don't even want to be part of this. He told me when they have you, they don't play around with you. They come put that evidence right in front of you, and you know it's you. You know what you got against you, and you ain't got no choice but to take that plea because more than likely, if you go to trial, it may not come out as well as the plea deal. But that's not always true. Sometimes you can go to trial, and you can get a different yes.
In this situation here, like I said, I must have got at least 50 different pleas from all these attorneys within this 2.5 years.
But you knew you didn't do it, so you didn't take it.
I denied every last one of them.
Okay.
Then from there, I kept saying, I want to see what the prosecution has. I had more stuff against the actual accuser, but the prosecution had to charge me.
Well, okay, so there you have it. If you know you didn't do it, don't take a plea. Wait them out. Do whatever you got
to
do.
Prior to taking a plea, review everything. Make sure that attorney that's representing you is actually asking the prosecution to give up everything that the prosecution has.
Well, Stephen, that sounds good, but we know Dallas don't keep proper paperwork. They've lost terabytes. So,
but see, here's the deal: if it's requested on file, that grants an opens for an appeal in the case that you do get a verdict in your contract.
Okay, so here are two important things that I want to make sure that everybody understands. And correct me if I'm wrong and respect me if I'm right, because this is the real deal with the reality coach. The first thing you need to be in the know of is when you're selecting an attorney, do your own research. And you don't have to stay with the attorney that they gave you. You can always ask for a different attorney.
I recommend that if somebody's getting an attorney to represent themselves on a criminal case, if that attorney has any colleagues, even including the judge, for your representation on your matter. Because 9 out of 10, if they have colleagues or they even have some back doors where they were with the judges or the office, they're not going to 100% try to actually affect you.
Okay, so when you're dealing with these three types of lawyers. There's only three ways that you can get an attorney. You can either pay for one. You can ask for one to do pro bono, which is the 600 billable hours that Mr. Ruffin talked about. And then you can also get a court-appointed attorney. And even when you do either of these three, it is imperative that you as the person either in the seat or a family member of someone in the hot seat, do your own research and understand your constitutional rights. Am I right? Is that what you say that is a good...
What was his name, the gentleman above me?
Reggie Ruffin, and he is with Just Cause Coalition.
Oh, okay, Reggie Ruffin. Because he kind of touched on the topic of resetting, that the prosecution likes to reset, to drag out cases. They do like to do that, but however, I think it would be beneficial for an individual that was firstly charged with a crime to take advantage of their position to be able to reset, not the prosecution's position, but the defendant, as they... I was charged with a crime.
You was free, so you was out here able to do your work, so it ain't good for somebody sitting in there to do...
But hear me out. Before they're sitting in there, though, they have a route to be able to say, hey, you know what, I want to be able to research this, research that, because one thing that most defendants don't know, even if they do not have an attorney, they have a right to put a motion into the court to say to the judge, I need X amount of money to be utilized for my defense.
Oh,
Most defendants don't know they have that right to ask and request other courts to provide them with a certain amount of monetary amount to utilize for the defense.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. But that's on a whole nother. That's you taking us too fast. You're taking us way over here. Let's let us stay in this vein so we can make sure that they understand this.
I understand because there's some parents that are out in the real world while their son or their family member's locked up. They're trying to look for bail money. They're trying to look for attorney money. What all they have
to do is put their houses up and everything for collateral.
What?
Putting houses up for collateral, all that.
What they don't know, and Dallas County just freaking point out there, though, is that the inmate that's in jail could actually file a motion where the family member will file it with the court saying that that inmate needs X amount of money for his legal representation because he's going to be pro bono. He could start off pro bono himself, pro se, then go pro bono.
Well, now in all fairness, now I know from experience, just because you're out here filing, the inmate is filing paperwork, I'm just saying Dallas County because this is where I am and this is what I've experienced here in this county. When my son was filing his paperwork, it never seemed to make it to the clerk's record. It never got filed. But the only way it would get filed is if I go down there and I personally file it. So anyone that has a family member that's incarcerated in jail, prison, whatever, make sure that you stay on top of this paperwork because it will not get filed if those inmates are sending it in. I mean, it'll get filed eventually. But
the time frame might lapse as far as that individual's defense. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So, Reggie, so that's very important, too, that what Stephen just said. There is a time frame to get all this paperwork in.
Yeah, it is. And that all plays into the stall tactic. Everything is always about stalling. Because, I mean, I had evidence to show that I was being blackmailed. When I tried to offer that to the police, they said, well, we're done with the case. We're not investigating it anymore. Or then when you try to take, what were you about to say?
No, okay.
You were so caring. The other thing is, you know, in regards to the terabyte, they'll say that they have all that information. They'll lie to you and say they got everything. Then in the end, when you get convicted and you go into that appeal stage, all of a sudden all the evidence that you supposedly had or they had, that disappears for some certain reason.
And if you want,
that's why one of the main things we say. Go ahead. What are you about to say?
Well, I was just getting ready to say. And if you want to see firsthand how they do this with this fake evidence, like our former President Trump said, fake news. If you want to see how they do with fake evidence, be at George Allen's courtroom tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the fifth floor. You will see and I'm speaking on what I know for a fact. I can't speak on anybody else, but what I know for a fact, they stated that DNA, they had DNA and three women accusing my son, and he had a gun. You will see tomorrow what the arguments will be to counteract what they're claiming. That action that they claimed, you will see the act that they did in order to make that become action. And it's not right. It is not right for people to do that.
Well, I will say in that regard, try not to be too shocked when you might find out that a lot of stuff they claim they had, they never had in the first place. Tomorrow you're going to find out a whole lot of things that was kept from you. And like I said, just try not to be too shocked when you find that out, because there are like 20,000, even probably more than that, people are still waiting for their day to get their appeals done because Texas is so backed up. And COVID already put the system behind 3-4 more additional years to the two they was already behind. So there's a lot of people that's just sitting in jail, haven't even had their day in court, waiting for that. And they either have exhausted all their remedies for appeals or whatnot, because all they want to do is keep those slaves down there at them prison camps.
Well,
and the last thing they definitely want to do, I would say 40% of most of these cases should have never been prosecuted, should never even gotten where they were. If they went back and audited all this stuff, Texas would go broke paying people back for all the stuff they done. Because, I mean, like I said, there's people down there 20 years, 25 years over evidence that they never had in the first place.
So,
how many times have you seen people getting exonerated for DNA evidence that they never had, that they should have had?
Well,
you can't convict nobody unless you had the evidence.
Well, there's so much that we can say about all of this, because I'm telling you, it is what he's saying is 100% truth. What Mr. Stephen has said is 100% truth. I'm telling y'all, if you've got anyone that is caught up in this situation, do not just take their word for it. You better do your own homework. You know, and we as a people, and I'm talking about black people, when I was told my son was given a life sentence and just let him go over there, but when you know your loved one and you know your family, you stand up and you fight for your loved one, because if you don't, they're going to end up spending a lifetime in prison. When Mr. Ruffin just clearly said, there's so many people, 40% of the people are not guilty down there. And then Mr. Stephen told you that they tried to give him 5 years, and he knew he didn't do it. And he hung in there, and he did his work. You got to do your due diligence. It ain't good enough to just say, oh, Lord, I'm going to pray about it. No, you better get out and work about it. Because if you don't, pray.
I didn't depend on the public defender's office or these freelance attorneys, because I knew they're all connected somehow through the gym. You know what I mean? So what I had to do was get that to go out there finding this evidence on my own. You know what I mean? Because it convinced you. They say, we got this. We're taking care of this. We're going to be ready for you. They're not going to be ready for that trial if you let them handle it on their own without seeing the stuff. And you can tell a good attorney, because if they say they have certain documents or certain kind of stuff that they're going to use in your defense, they put the show to you prior to that court date. I'd be like, you know what? See you.
Okay, well, you all, this has been the real deal with the Reality Coach, and I want to thank you, Stephen, for being here and sharing your story, and Reggie of Just Cause Coalition for helping us understand that the 600 billable hours, that's important, y'all, the 600 billable hours, but also understanding the three differences in the types of
that 600 billable hours, I was just going to tell y'all, too, that the public needs to know about. That 600 billable hours also goes into factors the county is looking at as far as bond amounts. When they're looking at as far as placement for bond amounts, they want to match that the billable hours is going to be comparison to what the county is going to have to pay to defend our cases.
Oh, wow.
That's another situation that's going on with Dallas County right now. They've lost a lot of bond money for the individuals that are awaiting trial. That's affecting the outcome of those cases as well.
Oh, that's wow. Okay. Well, that's another whole can of worms.
That's a hot mess on a hot mess on a hot mess.
Well, y'all, it's been one. Okay. Well, that's keeping it 100% real. That's the real deal. What you call again, Reggie? A hot mess on top of
a hot mess on top of a hot mess with more mess to go. Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, we will be talking about this till 6 o'clock.
And so,
well,
yeah,
and then if you look at the word message, you got a mess. And it ages as it goes. Message.
Yeah, that's that part. It reeks. That definitely does that.
Well, you guys, thank you so much. And I would love to do this again. And we will go into this time. This was about how to obtain your attorneys and what you need to do once you get an attorney. Do your due diligence. Do not. And then there was another. The attorneys was one. And then what was the other one? Oh. The preliminary, the investigative, and you got to do your own investigation. Just point blank, you got to.
Yeah, a lot of times, that is true. But I will say this, in all caution, is that they will sit up there and say, "Well, who did you get this information from, and how did you get it?" Then they will try to use that to discredit you, because they're trying to keep your evidence from going into the trial, because. They're still trying to make you tap out, and I know that from my own experiences, because I had to go down there and do my own work, that definitely helped me get it, and that helped me get exonerated. But even after that, if you go through all of that trouble, then you got to worry about trying to get your life back together again.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay, well.
You fight to stay out of prison, but then guess what? Now you're in a financial prison, which is just as bad. I might as well be down there peeling potatoes at the rate it goes for some people.
Well, there you have it. Look, they will, and the whole thing is two things. It's money and time. And that's something that everybody needs to have, both money and time. And guess what? They got your money tied up, and they got more time to keep your money.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah, that part.
This one, I'm still waiting for the bond money that they expected me to pay cash for prior to even releasing me.
Okay, I'm through. Goodbye. Good day. It's a wrap. It's done. I'm done. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
I thought it was Saturday if it was like $300, $400. I got to wait for for, but $2,500 that they took from my books when I was there, I got to wait 46 weeks to get that back. And it's got to go back to the same process to the judges so they could even go back down.
Good luck. Call the comptroller's office, but good luck on all that.
Yeah, that's what they said.
Well, your bonds is probably in those terabytes ate up, okay? Well, anyway, with that being said, thank you, gentlemen, again. Be blessed, and y'all keep it 100% real. Live your reality because, hey, I'm the reality coach, liberating minds, transforming lives. Live your reality and don't worry about tomorrow because it ain't promised, and you can't worry about yesterday because it's already gone. So live where you are today. Bye. Thank you. Okay. Bye, y'all.